Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
All right, Satoransky on the inbounds. Far hash mark sideline. Left with Lowry on the ball. 8.1 left. 93-92 Toronto. And it goes to Levine. Wide left. Dribble drive left. The angle. It is up. No. Rebound. Loose. And it is Norman Powell and Lowry. And the ball game is over. And the Bulls lose another heartbreaker. 93-92.
Joe, I coach by faith. I coach and teach every day on where I think we're going to be. When that's going to happen, when that's going to break through, I'm not sure. But I'm going to keep coaching that way. Teach, we'll watch this, we'll learn from it, and we'll grow. We are playing good, hard basketball. We got to win two or three more possessions. One more defensive rebound. One more loose ball. One more open three. We got to make it. That's the difference in this. And I'm not going to let any negativity deter us from that mission. That's what we're going to do.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Wow.
Another loss, another game where you lose by a point, another kind of selfish play at the end of the game, not playing team basketball at the end of the game, and another moment for your head coach to kind of,
Not his best moment. You know, look, he can coach by faith, but we can judge by sight, and this Bulls team does not pass the eye test. And they're not getting it done late, and that's consistent, and that's the sign of a young team that doesn't know how to win, and certainly the Bulls don't. But it is something that you have to, at some point in time, when you continue to lose close games, you have to look at the coaching, and down the stretch, you have to know these things. You have to be better than they have been. Zach LaVine.
Listen to it. Should we listen to Stacey?
Because Stacey King broke down what should have happened. You called it selfish, and I think that's a understandable conclusion to reach.
I would have loved to see Zach LaVine give that ball to Daniel Gafford. We can roll it back a little bit, and you see this drive. Now, Zach's been having a tough time in the second half. Go back to the overhead view, please, if we can get that. This is when you got to know what the situation is. Okay, now watch Daniel Gafford. He's open right now. If you throw that ball right there, that's a dumb game time. Go ahead and roll it. He's going to come up. Now, freeze it right now. That ball now has got to be there. Ball's got to be there. That's a game-winning dunk right there. Go ahead and roll it. Zach tries to score. He goes in. Tough shots. And had he gave it to the rookie Gafford, the Bulls win that game easily.
Okay. Now, if your analyst can coach it up like that, you can't have faith. You got to have direction. You got to use that as a teaching moment with Zach LaVine, whether he wants it or not, whether he's mad at you for pulling him out of a game or not. Whatever the case may be, you have to get that message to him.
You have to deliver it, because on Friday night, you had a similar situation, not down to the last second, but it was the last shot, and Zach LaVine took it, and it didn't work. So in that moment, you have to remind him, you have to remind him that somebody's going to come open if they have, defenders running at you as they did. Frustrating.
When you have the end of the game, he gets the ball, and listen, he's their star. They don't have anybody else that you would give the ball to that can get a shot off the dribble, whatever way you want to put it. But it is always a predetermined conclusion in his mind that he is going to be the guy that takes the big shot, when in reality, kick it out to John Paxson and let him hit the jumper to win a championship. Who's the open man?
Right.
That's Phil in the timeout yelling at Michael. And Michael's a hell of a lot better player scorer than Zach LaVine's ever going to be. But the point is, share the ball. Make the basketball play. Don't take the ball. I'm going to take the shot. Well, if someone else is wide open who could dunk the ball, then it is incumbent upon you to realize it and distribute.
Also, have the awareness that here's Zach LaVine, and obviously he's a scorer and has a scorer's mentality, but you haven't scored in the second half. It's not like you're on a roll and you're feeling it, and you have one of those fourth quarters where nobody can stop you, and here you are again with an opportunity to win the game. You have to have the awareness. You're not hot. You're not doing whatever it takes. And, you know, that was the way the game ended. But that fourth quarter, a couple things that came up in the final minutes really bothered me, again, because this season is all about Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen making their presence felt enough to impact outcomes. Markkanen had two times in the final few minutes where he had the ball in the paint, or he had the ball at kind of the mid-range position on the court, and didn't come away with baskets. And one time was a really bad turnover, and he just wasn't strong with the basketball. That can't happen for this team to do what it wants to do. This wasn't a team. I mean, the Toronto Raptors were a beatable team. This was the third straight loss to a beatable opponent.
No question about it, and that goes back to coaching. And I'm sorry for going after you, Jim.
I coach by faith.
Yeah, that's. I listen. I understand the passion he feels. And there's part of me that admires that he is talking in that fashion. But unfortunately, you're not delivering. It's not happening. If you had won half those games, then I think we'd view it differently and we'd think about them being good at what they're doing. But it's not there, man. It's not there. Zach LaVine's got to wake the hell up, too.
You want your fans to have blind faith. You don't want your head coach to have it.
No, you want your head coach to coach.
You want your head coach to coach, and you have to hold some players accountable.
What he's saying with faith is that he believes they're going to get that shot.
Yep.
He believes they're going to get to a point where they make those plays.
And he thinks that through hard work and effort and spirit and soul and all the catchwords and buzzwords and catchphrases, that was last year. That was last year's narrative. That can't be acceptable this season, because this was a season that we all thought and they told us was going to be a team to contend for a playoff spot, and that's just not happening.
I covered the Bulls 100 years ago, right? And Michael Jordan was winning titles the first go round. And I remember having a conversation with Michael about Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen could do everything but hit a clutch jumper, could do everything but hit the game-winning shot. And I asked Michael, how do you hit a game-winning shot? What is it that fuels the ability to hit game-winning shots? And he had a very interesting answer. He said that throughout the course of a game, you have these little crises of confidence, for lack of a better term. Whether things are going well or going poorly, you can second-guess yourself. But for him, he always knew in his heart that he could hit the big shot because he had done it before. So he could hearken back to his memory of being a freshman in college and playing Georgetown in the national championship. He actually said this, and hitting a shot that wound up being the game winner, even though Georgetown committed a terrible mistake after that and all the rest of it. We all know the history of that. But Michael had that shot in his hip pocket from his freshman year in college in a national championship game. He had these happy memories, and he could find himself in a place when it mattered, where he knew he could do it and he would do it. He'd done it before, and he said sometimes if you haven't done it before, it becomes more difficult.
Those are developing winning habits, and he certainly could reference those. But when you have a team that's developing losing habits, that's what you have
exactly
when you have
right.
The Bulls. And the Bulls now, according to Cody Westerlund, have coughed up 5 fourth quarter leads of 8 or more points. 5 fourth quarter leads of 8 or more points. Imagine had they been able to do what you just described and reference something positive happening and them holding on to the lead and finishing the job. They have too many examples of them blowing a lead and not doing what it takes to win a ball game.
David, that fact, you know, 8 points, blowing leads. Not only is that got to be in their own head, but I'm guaranteeing you that's in the opponent's head.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they're in a timeout. Hey, these guys will give it up. They will give it to you if you keep going. And sure enough, it happens.
They have faith that the Bulls are going to fold. And typically they're rewarded with that because that's what happens.
Teams are playing.
I coach by faith.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately,
oh boy,
there's been a lot of faith built up in your opponents, whether you're realizing that or not. And, again, I'm not as down on Jim Boylan as the rest of the free world seems to be. And I get it that this kind of stuff sounds hokey, But, you know, a lot of stuff in sports is hokey.
You know, you're right. I mean, neither one of us have been like, have attacked him personally like that has happened in this market. And I think that we want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I wrote at the beginning of the season, you know, you want to try to learn to understand where he's coming from and his vantage point. But at some point, you do run out of patience in terms of you want results to match that. And I think from a fan standpoint, here's what's happening, I think, with the Bulls fan base. And I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody, but if you just pay attention here, the anger and outrage that people feel about Boylan is turning into apathy. And pretty soon people just aren't going to care, and they're going to stop showing up, and they're going to stop watching and listening and talking about the Bulls, and they're going to teeter toward irrelevance, and that's what no franchise can tolerate.
Well, I'm glad that you're saying they're going to, because I'm afraid that's already happening.
It might be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're seeing. It's often, you know, you don't see the reaction right away. It takes a while for people to say, you know, it's not worth going. I don't want to go see that again. You know, they're going to blow a lead in the fourth quarter. They haven't played well at home. They've lost games at home. This is a team that came into the year unafraid of saying, we want to be a playoff team. We look around the landscape. We see what's going on in the Eastern Conference. We believe we can make the playoffs. Now, the fact is, you could make a like 17 game jump and still be in the lottery with the reality of where the Bulls are right now. So I don't know that maybe they placed expectations on themselves that they can't meet. I understand they're probably a better team than they've shown, but
I don't think there were realistic expectations, Mully. I agree.
The Eastern Conference is terrible, David. But I'm saying there are a couple of things worth watching. I really do enjoy watching Kobe Bryant play. I think he's
Kobe White. Yeah,
Kobe Bryant. Yeah. I like watching too. Kobe too. Kobe White. I'm enjoying watching that. I think that that was a good draft pick. Really good draft pick. I think that Wendell Carter Jr. is a fun, hardworking guy who's playing hard. You know, I don't know what's going on with Markkanen. I don't know what Zach LaVine is.
It's a mystery. And I think that there are some things you like about this Bulls team. But here's what's baffling, though. I like Gafford, what we have seen in spurts. I think Denzel Valentine has come back and been productive more so than I thought he would be. And why did we question that? Because he was buried at the end of the bench. And where has Gafford gone since his breakout game? These are decisions that I just don't understand why they're not a bigger part of the rotation. And we're not there every day. Certainly, we don't watch practice, but still. Right. You wonder about these decisions with personnel, and there's too many questions that outnumber the answers, and that's where the Bulls are right now.
All right, we may have buried our lead. A lot of people are very interested in Chris Bryant potentially being traded.
That's what Riz told me.
We got a lot of people who want to talk about that. We will get to all of your phone calls next. That's not what Riz told. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
We have our work cut out for us. It's we're at an important time. We're trying to serve a lot of buried interest. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. Not even we know where it's going. You know, we know there are things that we'd like to do. We don't know what's going to be possible for us yet. And it's an off season. I think we have to be patient in a lot of ways. There's free agency seems to be starting to move along, and then trades will come next. And we're trying to stay on top of everything, make sure we don't miss an opportunity to get better.
Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. That is Theo Epstein. That was yesterday at the league meetings. And it's interesting. Did he say we're trying to varied interests? We're trying to meet a lot of varied interests.
I think that might have been what he said. He invited the reporters, Cub Beat guys, to a suite and held court and left it kind of open-ended. But I think everyone got the message, you know, patience. Yeah.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Prudence.
What are those varied interests? I think they are
budgetary.
That's what he's saying.
He's saying without saying that what Tom Ricketts is suggesting when he says to the Sports Business Journal that they were 100% over budget. It's hard not to connect the dots, Mully. I know that they don't want us to, and I know that they'll say it's separate, but when you have on one hand on the same day, Cubs chairman Tom Ricketts, on the cost of Wrigley Field renovations, yes, being quoted as saying, we probably missed our budget by around 100%.
Do you think the baseball budget was missed by about, what, 50, 60, 100%?
We have our work cut out for us.
I don't know if they missed the baseball budget or if it was limited by that reality that they were over budget with the renovations. Is that naive to make that connection? Or is it dumb not to?
I got to tell you, when I first heard Theo, I thought he said we have a lot of buried interests. I think we got a lot of hidden stuff we're trying to hide from you, but it's varied interests. And that is being good while also clearing up cap space, while also keeping everybody happy and on the same page. And they did announce all sorts of coaching additions. They got the whole staff together.
Hadovy's back.
All the pitching guys are back.
It's good for the show.
Yeah, it's good for the show. That's all we really care about. But the big rumor out there, the big story breaking, is that they have indeed been talking Chris Bryant trade, and they've talked to the Phillies about it. The Phillies showing interest. Again, the idea being that until they know what's going to happen with his time of service, there really can't be a deal done because you don't know if you're getting them for a year or 2 years. You suspect you're getting them for 2 years, but until that arbitrator sort of reacts, it's going to be hard to get a good deal done. But
I understand all that. I respect that point of view. Let's hear from people, because I don't think it's a good idea. I know that there are valid reasons why people think you have to shop Chris Bryant and possibly even trade him, but I think they would rue the day that they did that.
All right, we'll start with Kevin. Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hey, David, I was thinking the exact same thing you were thinking when I was reading this nonsense about the $500 million and $500 million over. And let's just look at the leadership of this team quickly. Tom Ricketts promised all profits would go back into the team, specifically the on-field product. Crane Kenny talked about wheelbarrows full of money to go back in the on-field product. Theo promised waves and waves and waves of young pitching. So now we're at the point, because all three of those people failed at what they did, that we have to get rid of the best prospect that we've had since Ryan Sandberg. So what has this team done in the last 18 months? We've coddled a domestic abuser. We've signed a TV deal where half of us can't see the games now. And the result of it is we're not going to be able to see the games. The team's going to be horrible next year, and we have to get rid of Chris Bryant. This is a disaster from all three of those guys on every level, and anyone who thinks that this $500 million over on the budget, Ricketts keeps crying poor mouth. He's sitting on another offseason, and all they do is print money. The only people
Kevin, come on now. I mean,
listen. Go over the luxury tax
No. But Kevin, I mean, every time you turn around, what have they done? They've opened up the checkbook, right? Go take a look at what happened last year. Now, it ended up not being a good move, but they opened up the checkbook, right?
Right, Molly, just one final point on that. Because Theo spends the money poorly, now the fans have to suffer? No, Ricketts should have to suffer. This is not on the fans, and now the on-the-field product is going to suck because this guy keeps signing horrible players. That's not our fault.
Thanks, Kevin.
And no one is going to cry poor for little Tommy Ricketts and his golden spoon.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know, I think you're being incredibly unfair there. And again, I think every time Theo has wanted something, the Cubs have called for it. I don't think they've said no to him that much. And I think they are putting a lot of the money back into the baseball operation. And I think the $500 million is basically baseball operation money, isn't it? So that's a lot of money they're putting into the ballpark. They're getting everything they would want, and it's going to be not just for them, but for generations of their family. It's something that had to happen, but it's also a ton of outlay. If you can't see that, if you look at all that you see there, all the sparkling jewels, and you say, "Well, these people are just making money," they're pouring in money to make money. Let's
second highest payroll. So I think, in fairness, you have to remember that. I think what he's trying to say is that the series of bad decisions in terms of spending money, and they have spent it, but they have been bad decisions. Kimbrel, Brandon Morrow, and, you know, obviously people want to go back to Hayward. I think that the fear is, or maybe the frustration lies in that if those bad decisions lead to a worse decision in having to trade Chris Bryant because he can't afford him, then that is that too far. You know, that's the frustrating part of it. They have, but it would be incorrect and inaccurate to say that they haven't spent the money in
no,
the past.
No, it's just not fair. Matt's in River North. Hey, Matt.
Good morning, fellas.
Morning, Matt.
Here's the thing with Chris Bryant. What am I getting for him? I mean, if I'm getting, you know, two stud pitchers, I would do it. But here's another thing. If you really talk to people, like I have a lot of buddies that are Nats fans, the guy they fear most in the Cubs lineup with the game on the line is Rizzo. He's the guy. He's their money player when the game really counts. He doesn't strike out. He puts the ball in play, and he's a gold glove. And not that Bryant's a great player, but what am I getting for him? I mean, I'd have to know that. I'm not just going to give him away, but if I got Syndergaard and someone else, I might do it.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
Syndergaard's not in
play. They're not talking to the Mets. From what we have heard, based on the reports, and there's quotes in around reports, the Phillies, the Braves, the Padres have been teams that you have heard mentioned in connection with Chris Bryant.
And the I keep hearing Atlanta is the most likely.
Because they have the prospects to give up, and they would be in the market for a third baseman, that makes a lot of sense because they're also a contender. Yeah. But why would you trade Chris Bryant to a team that eventually might beat you in the playoffs?
Let's try Frank. He's in the West Loop. Good morning, Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Good morning, guys. You know, and this is coming from a Southside fan here. I just feel that trading Chris Bryant, and like you just stated, who's out there that you're going to get for him? You know, I think it would be, you know, the man can start at about six different positions. You know, getting rid of Chris Bryant is not the answer. I feel that it would hurt the Cubs ultimately. You know, and this isn't a North Side South Side rivalry. You know, like it was so many years. Regardless, the Ricketts know they're going to sell tickets. Okay, people are going to go sit there. They're going to watch the game, whether they're tourists or diehard Cub fans.
Right.
They're going to make their money.
There's a short income there. Yeah.
It's for sure income. Exactly. And Chris Bryant is, in my eyes, like an Anthony Rizzo to an extent. He's a great player. You know what I mean? He had a little offseason. You know, he's injury prone a little bit, this and that. But the value of a player like Chris Bryant, where he's not cemented in right field or cemented at third base. The man's just too much. He's too good for the franchise to even consider.
He's their best player.
He is their best player.
All around,
he's better than Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah. Best player, without a doubt.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Thanks, Frank. Yeah.
Thanks, Frank.
I mean, I agree with him. I think it would. I use the term heartbreak. I mean, I think if I'm a Cub fan and you lose a guy like that, you just don't get it.
Yeah. Then you spend the rest of the day or the rest of the offseason wondering why did they do what they did and. Can you believe they got rid of Chris Bryant?
But I mean, if he thinks he's getting more money than the right fielder, his childhood friend
Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I was going to say his soon to be teammate. then that's he's got another thing coming because I don't think they want to pay him that kind of money, and I think that's what he's looking for, and they're trying to. If they feel they can't get an extension and can't take advantage of the fact that there's a couple of years here where they can give him that top dollar.
Could you imagine the Phillies going out on opening day with Joe Girardi handing him the lineup card and Chris Bryant being on it?
Right.
I can.
With Jake Arrieta on the mound?
Well, if he's back healthy by then.
Just stop.
It's going to be really telling what the first move is that the Cubs make. If it's a signing or if it's a salary dump, if it's a trade, I think whatever they do first will be very telling to what will happen for the rest of the offseason.
You're right, Kevin.
And it will be very telling to hear from our guy Brad Biggs coming up next.
Next time, next.
After the update.
Brad Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Big Z!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. How's it going?
Well, it's going well, and we wonder about the health of this team and how important this game is. I want to talk. I mean, we'll get to Roquan and we'll get to Akeem and all that, but we haven't really talked to you about Prince Mukamara and how much do they miss him and how important is it for him in this game and can he play? And Brad, if this is an elimination game, do you push it a little bit and try to get him back, even if you're risking his injury and maybe he doesn't play the final two games. Because if you don't win, the final two games don't matter.
Yeah, you don't need to show up and play him as a whole. I think the hope is that Prince will be able to play on Sunday against the Packers. Suffered a hamstring injury at the end of that Lions game. You know, you never really saw him come out of that game with an injury. Sat out against Dallas on a short week. There was almost no way he was going to be able to play with a hamstring injury in 4 days' time. And the hope is, yeah, that he'll be able to go against Green Bay. Kevin Tolliver, I thought, was okay against the Cowboys, but you're certainly in a position where you would prefer to have Amukamara out there and ready to go against Aaron Rodgers, who's is absolutely as crafty as they come.
Brad,
we'll get a better idea on injury situation, of course, tomorrow.
Offensively, I think the one thing that we have maybe overlooked a little bit and haven't talked about since the Cowboys game, Cordero Patterson had a bigger role finally, or at least a little bit expanded role. It wouldn't be hard to expand. Yeah, it wouldn't be hard to expand that, but he was at least noticeable and impactful.
He was at zero.
Will we see any more of that? Why did that happen, and where did he go?
Well, yeah, Patterson had gone forever without either being targeted in the passing game or getting a handoff in the running game. And when I say forever, I believe his previous touch before the play against Dallas was in the loss to the Eagles. Okay, so think about that. I mean, that was November 3rd, if my recall is correct. So you had the offense using more of four wide sets because of the situation at tight end, where a lot of those guys are injured and they've been unproductive and that type of thing. But Patterson, the opponents really didn't even have to account for. And you know, he had a big play in that game, but he went, yeah, I'm looking through my notes here, guys. He went a total of 61 offensive snaps between either being targeted with a pass or taking a handoff. I mean, that's a full game.
It's a lot of blocking.
Imagine having a guy out there and not being targeted once the whole game. I mean, you could do that with a guy like Sol, you know. You're converted offensive lineman. And Patterson did do some blocking in that Dallas game. So will we see more of him against the Packers? Yeah, I think you got to kind of pick your spot. He is not a talented route runner. So I don't think you're going to do anything with him complex in the passing game. But he certainly is very dangerous with the ball in his hands when he can get in the open field. He's such a difficult guy to tackle because he's got an incredible combination of size, strength, and speed.
All right, Roquan going down. How much does it hurt him? We know that it didn't hurt him against Dallas when he went out. They did okay, but certainly we saw that kind of earlier in the year where when Akeem went out, they had maybe their best win of the season over Minnesota, but then they had a hard time stopping the run after that.
Yeah, I think Kevin Pierre-Louis was pretty darn good in a small window of what you saw him against the Cowboys. Heck, he knocked down Dak Prescott on his second snap coming off a blitz. And he's a guy with a big opportunity here. Remember back to the game in London against Oakland where he was the player that got the penalty for running into the kicker on that punt that really gave the Raiders a boost there late in that game and you could say was a huge factor in the Bears losing that game. The penalty extended beyond the 5 yards for Pierre-Louis. he was inactive for the next two games, you know, and while the Bears probably wouldn't say that they were sending him a message, I would think that they were sending him a message. and he's, you know, active since then after sitting out those two games. And he's an athletic guy. You know, he's a little undersized. He physically fits the profile of what they're looking for. He's a pretty smart guy. And he's a guy that was with Matt Nagy previously in Kansas City. So he knows what kind of guy he is. Is it a downgrade? Absolutely. I mean, he's not Roquan Smith. He's not going to become Roquan Smith. But again, he can move pretty well. I think his instincts are decent. We'll see. Over a three-game stretch, I think when it's over, we'll probably say, yeah, they would have been better with Roquan out there. But that doesn't mean that this guy can't play good football for him.
Brad, last week before the Cowboys game, we sort of pitted it as a desperate team plays a more desperate team, and you wondered who was the most desperate among the Cowboys and the Bears. This week, obviously, it's an elimination game for the Bears, but the Packers, what are they playing for, and how much do they – how do they view this game? They're 10-3. Things are going pretty well for them. What's at stake for them?
At stake for them right now, I'd start with the number two seed in the playoffs. If the playoffs started this week, they would be the two seed. So you talk about having a first-round bye. And I think, as I mentioned yesterday morning, guys, the Super Bowl winner has not played in the wild card round in, I want to say, at least 5 years. So that's a path to Miami right there if you can avoid playing in the wild card round. The division crown is certainly going to be up for grabs as well, and the Packers would be dealt a blow with a loss to the Bears. Now, Green Bay doesn't want to get caught in a look-ahead spot where it's thinking about the Week 16 Monday night game that the Packers have up in Minnesota. But this is a huge game for the Packers. You can't underestimate that. Packers haven't played great lately. You know, they let the Redskins kind of hang around on Sunday, and they, in fact, Green Bay had to recover an onside kick with less than 2 minutes to play to seal that game against Washington. It was 20-15, and while the score the week before that in a trip to the Giants looked pretty darn lopsided, I believe the final was 31-14. That was, or 34-14 it might have been. That was a close game between Green Bay and the Giants at the end of the third quarter, and then things kind of unraveled for the Giants, as they tend to do in the fourth quarter. So the Packers haven't been at their best the last two times out.
You know, it's interesting, Brad, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, this idea that to start the season, the question was how was Matt LaFleur's relationship with Aaron Rodgers going to go? And, you know, there was some friction there, and Rodgers on a couple of occasions has talked about, we need to run the ball, and different things that have been said implies that it's not this great relationship, but the 10 wins sort of covers over anything. Any idea where those two guys are at in terms of how they get along and how Rodgers is feeling about this team?
Yeah, I think they're getting along pretty well. The team's record is probably going to be a pretty decent gauge for the warmth of the relationship, right? As you point out, and I think that LaFleur has leaned on Rodgers to find out, you know, what he is comfortable with, what he would like to steer clear of, and sort of his thoughts on what they need to do offensively, because a lot has been on Rodgers with some of the injuries that they've had on offense this season, specifically Davante Adams missed. It was about four games, maybe five, with a turf toe injury. You know, he had one of those painful, lingering turf toe injuries, and now you're asking Rodgers with a cast of unknowns to go out and perform. And in the long run, right now, maybe that was a blessing for the Packers because it allowed Rodgers to kind of zero in on some other guys like Alan Lazard, who's making plays for him on a pretty regular basis now as well. So I think the coach and the quarterback are doing pretty well right now.
Before we let you go, Brad, quickly, what did you think of last night's Monday night game with Eli Manning having sort of a resurgent first half, but the Eagles winning in overtime?
Boy, that was an awful, miserable game. miserable conditions. Just did not look real good. One thing, but before we go here, guys, the Packers are 25th in the league against the run. Defensively, that's something they've struggled with all season. They're giving up almost 123 yards a game on the ground. Recall back to the opener, the Green Bay 10-3 win, the Bears had 15 running plays for 46 yards. Of those 15 running plays, only 12 of them were handoffs. They'd probably like a redo on the distribution of the run pass in that first meeting. Packers have been slightly better against the run lately, but that's been a significant issue for that Green Bay defense all season.
All righty, Bigsy. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks,
great
Brad.
Catching up.
All right, guys. Have a great day.
I hope that doesn't mean they're going to try to run Tariq Cohen between the tackles.
You'd love it when that happens.
God help us all. All right. We've got Coach Wannstedt's going to be in studio with us. I believe he is looking very salubrious. I saw him walk by very filled with
the
good health.
A photo shoot somewhere.
Yes. He must be doing a GQ shoot or something like that. We'll bring Dave in next. Mully and Haw on the score.